everyone, welcome back to another episode of But Why the Podcast, and we've been on a little mini hiatus until our live show at PAX South this coming weekend, January 17th through 19th. And in the meantime, I want you all to take a listen to an interview that I did with Dylan Gilbertson, the writer and creator of the upcoming horror comic Sweetheart from Action Labs. So take a listen, and I hope you enjoy.
I'm Dylan Gilbertson. I'm a comic book writer. I am living in San Diego, and I've done various comic book projects, most of them anthologies. I was in the Local Haunts anthology. Most recently, I was part of the What Fresh Hell Is This anthology from Red Stylo Media. And my most current project that will be coming out in March is Sweetheart.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking time to talk with me. Because when I saw the synopsis for Sweetheart, I was immediately taken by it. Because I come from a family where there are maybe three of us who don't have diabetes.
Oh, really?
Yes. We have both type 1 and type 2. So it was something that as soon as I saw the synopsis, it really hit me. And the fact that it's horror also hit me, because I'm a huge horror fan.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, like, what? Because looking at your brief bio, you've done, and just from what you've said, you've done a lot of work in horror. What draws you to that genre for storytelling?
I'll be honest, that was something I also was not sure of for the longest time. I mean, I've been watching horror since I can remember. I remember walking in, I stumbling into my dad's room where him and my brother were watching Leprechaun. And like, I wasn't supposed to be there, but they didn't know that I had arrived. And so I just sort of tucked under the foot of the bed and just like watched it while I was down there, and like was first horrified. And then I was just completely taken by it. And I think that was part of my journey for horror and how much I love it. But I think a lot of what I love about horror was sort of something I discovered over time, in that the thing with horror, so the thought of zombies or leprechauns or whatever in your basement is really terrifying, and like it conceptually seems like it's something that you wouldn't want in your life. You don't want to be afraid of these things. Yeah. Because it sort of makes your life more difficult to be afraid of these things. Mm-hmm. But then if you can actually bring yourself to go down into the basement and sort of face that and look at it and discover that, like, it's clearly ridiculous that these things don't exist, you can sort of learn that a lot of the things that you might be really afraid of aren't really... they don't exist. And so it's, I want to believe that horror sort of teaches you this sort of pseudo bravery to, I guess, face some of the things that you might be really stressed out about in your head. And then understand that just doing it anyway can be really beneficial, and that it's really not as bad as you think it is.
That's awesome. That's like a really good explanation of horror. And I think why, because I think one of the things that I get asked all the time is like, why do you like being scared? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's still something that I'm also not quite sure about, because I mean, every a horror movie that scares you is the best kind of horror movie. And I'm still unsure about what it is about being in the moment and actually being scared that I like so much. And so I'm also still trying to figure out.
Yeah. And so for, why don't you do, because I know what Sweetheart's about, but for people out there listening, why don't you, kind of summarize what Sweetheart is as a story, and maybe talk a little bit about why this was a story you needed to tell.
So the sort of the elevator pitch that I give for Sweetheart is that it's sort of like Stephen King's It, but there's more than one Pennywise. There's more than one kind of Pennywise, and the entire town knows about them. And so it takes place in this really small town in Maryland. and the entire town is sort of built around keeping its citizens comfortable and to some extent happy while they're at the same time being actively stalked by these monsters that live in the forest around them. So the school educates the kids about them. The hospital have medical treatments specific for the monsters. The police force know about them, everything. And so the story a lot is about this specific family who is chosen by one of the monsters. And so an additional part of the story is that once you're chosen by a monster, it will follow you your entire life until it successfully kills and eats you. And so if you are unlucky enough to be a small child when you're chosen, you essentially have to grow up with this monster following you your entire life. And so sorry, I got a phone call. I had to ignore it and got distracted. You're good. And so, yeah, so this story is sort of centers around one family some of them are chosen by different species of this kind of monster, and you kind of learn how the two species act differently and how they're similar in different ways. And so it's really about how this idea of growing up with a constant threat can affect you as a person, how it can, how some of the goods and bads of how it can affect you, but then also how it affects the ones you love, because whether it's diabetes or whether it's whether it's addiction or cancer or anything, is that being affected personally by it is horrible enough on its own, but then people who are close to you, people who you love, a lot of time their story is not told, and you don't really get to understand to the full extent of how it affects them. And so that's something that I really wanted to dig through. And I wanted to put it on display, but also it was sort of I kind of wanted to work through it myself, because I also wanted to try and understand it as best I could. And so the story sort of grew organically out of those curiosities, I guess.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And I think a lot of people, when they think of horror, they don't think of it as kind of like an analogy for these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
So what for you, when it came to representing, you know, like you said, like the impact that issues like diabetes or addiction, you know, these chronic illnesses have on like a singular person and their family, like what kind of drove you as this being the story that like you needed to tell? Like why is this kind of the one you picked to do right now?
So the initial idea for the story came when I was extremely sleep deprived after an overnight shift. My day job, or I guess sometimes also my night job, is working in sleep research, which means I have to do a lot of overnights.
Oh, wow.
and I'm a type 1 diabetic, and so the connection is obviously there. And after an overnight shift one morning, I also had to go, instead of going to sleep, I had to go to an endocrinologist appointment, which is essentially just a routine checkup for my diabetes. They talk about how well I'm doing with it, future complications that may arise because of however I'm living and things like that. And then I was driving home, and I should not have been driving at this point, given how tired I was.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about it and thought about how it's this thing that's never going to go away. Like it's a monster I've lived with forever. It's something that I just have to live with and make the best out of. And something that I never really forgot was how upset my mom was when I was first diagnosed when I was 6. I remember I didn't understand really what was happening. My mom got the test results back and she was visibly upset, and I asked her what was wrong and she was teary eyed, and it was just a very confusing time for me. And then I just watched the people around me sort of all get upset about this thing that I didn't understand. And so I was thinking about all this as I was driving home, and then got home, and then wrote down all these feelings that I had, and then just passed out for like 14 hours or so, and then woke up and was like, I think these are things that other people know exist. These I guess difficulties that people have, both primary and secondary, with these diseases and things. And so I'd already been a comic book writer, and this felt like something that I had a pretty firm grasp on and really just wanted to explore it. And then it just really snowballed from there and became what it is.
That's awesome. I'm honestly getting excited to read this when it comes out.
I'm glad.
This is extremely my jam. When it came to working with the artist on the book, Francesco La Quinta, how did you work with them on crafting what this monster would look like? Did you have an idea in your head of what kind of monster you wanted to be portrayed in the story? Were there, or was this something that the artist came up with?
It was a combination of both. I'll give Francesco a lot of credit for talking me down from what my initial thought was. I had this idea of them having these really long necks, and they were wearing clothes like humans, and they had hoods that weren't attached to sweatshirts. Like, they were just disembodied hoods in a way. It was really strange. And looking back on it, I'm really thankful that we went where we did with it. And so I gave Francesco this description, and he sent something back, and immediately I was like, this is so much better than what I had in mind. It's way more organic. It makes a lot more sense. But we, even after that, went through a lot of iterations. Some of them looked more fish-like. Sometimes they looked a lot more alien-like. But they were always supposed to be from the woods. And so creatures that are from the woods that remind you of aliens, like, you're always going to think they're aliens. And if they look like fish, then, like, you're just going to be thinking about fish. And I don't know, it never really fit a whole lot. And so we sort of worked through that together. And one of the things I wanted to have the monsters represent was not so. There are two types of monsters in the book. There's ones that are called stringers, which are sort of this pseudo analogy for type 1 diabetes itself. And then there's the bruisers, who are much larger, and they sort of have more of a parallel to type 2 diabetes. Okay. And I wanted their physical forms to somehow represent those conditions, but I also wanted them to have a connection outside of that, because diabetes, as common as it is and as more common as it's becoming, is still relatively niche, right? Like, yeah, you don't want to just tell a story about diabetes, because that's going to be very limiting for anyone else who wants to try and connect with it. We tried to make one of them extremely frail, very, very thin, because part of the danger that we sort of explore in the book is becoming not too comfortable, but getting to a point where you don't give it the effort that it needs. And so with something like, let's say if you were to apply that to addiction, like the concept of addiction is like, there's a really common understanding that once you're in recovery, you're in recovery forever. It never really goes away. And that monster, quote unquote, can get thinner and thinner and more fragile. But all the same, like, you have to be cautious, because if you were to ever bump into it at any given time, like, it could be all over from there. And so you can starve addiction, but it's never really dead, kind of a thing, if you can see the visual analogy there. And then the bruisers that are much larger are sort of the opposite end of that spectrum. And they can be, again, if we go with addiction again, an addiction that's fed too often and gets a little bit out of control and becomes much more dangerous. So you overfeed it, and it just becomes a lot more vicious, and it sort of demands a lot more attention and becomes a whole new sort of danger, even though they're kind of the same monster to begin with.
That's awesome. I mean, and just looking from the covers that I got sent, like, that's, I'm not sure which monsters are which on there, but they look terrifying.
All right, mission accomplished on that one.
And having this background piece to kind of fill it in helps a lot. I don't think people give a monster building enough credit when they look at horror movies for kind of representing all these things, or even when they read horror, you know, horror novels or in horror comics. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you too was, as you're crafting this story, what are some of the, you know, because obviously there's monsters involved, but there are so many different elements of horror. As you're writing the script for it, are there certain types of, and I don't use tropes badly here, but like, you know, horror tropes or horror mainstays that you're actively putting in, or are you just kind of organically letting it build itself out?
That's a really good question. yes, there was this initial drive when I first started writing the book, is that I didn't want anybody to be safe. Because, I mean, with horror movies and in stories in general, it's happened quite a few times, but there's usually a general understanding that the primary protagonist is not going to get off at any point. And I wanted there to be this feeling that was not the case. I didn't want people to just have this comfort to fall back on that everything was going to be okay for the main character. And that's really hard to try and do without like just offing them in the first 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And so that was something I tried to I guess a trope I tried to get away from. What are some other tropes? They got to be in there. Some of the tropes. I'm trying to say some of them without giving too much away, because there's some. I mean, to toot my own horn, I think there's some pretty good twists and turns as you read through the stories.
Yeah, I know how rough it can be, kind of be like, oh, because it's not out yet. It comes out in March, so I can definitely
understand. Right. Like,
if you can't mention anymore, that's perfectly okay. I don't want you to spoil anything.
right, exactly. Yeah, I don't know that I can. That's tough. Because there are tropes in there. I can see them. But to try to explain them too much, I think, is giving too much away with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the other things I wanted to ask, too, because, you know, art is more, at least when we look at comics, they really excel as a whole from the entire creative team. And we talked a little bit about the art, but I also wanted to ask you, what was it like working with color, with the colorists? Because I know overall, like, colors can really influence tone and emotion when reading art pieces and reading scripts. Did you work closely with them as well? Like, how close were your team? Did you have a mood or a palette picked ahead of time?
Yeah, so... When I first, so I had written the first script for the first issue of Sweetheart, and then immediately went hunting for artists at places like Twitter and DeviantArt. And I was on there for hours because I had this really close-minded, very specific look that I wanted for the book. And so I ended up passing on a lot of really great artists that I found on there. And that I later, like, I had friended a lot of them on Twitter, and like, I'm still in touch with them now, and they're great. but I passed on them for this project. And then when I found this page of a book that Francesco had worked on, I didn't know Francesco at the time. I'd never really heard his name, but I found this book that he'd worked on called Croak that he had won an award for. And it was so different from what I had into my mind, but it was so good that it actually made me start rethinking how the book should look.
Yeah.
And so his inks have this way of looking wet, almost like watercolors.
Wow.
But also showing a lot of incredible detail that you wouldn't normally get with watercolors, especially particularly in the close-ups.
Okay.
And so that made me rethink a lot of the scenes. What I saw later is that He will put in some very subtle changes as to how abstract some of his lines are, depending on the scene. Yeah. And so in issue one, there's the scene where this child Ben is in the hospital, and it's as you can imagine, connects with my experience when I was a kid. It's this very confusing, very scary scene where he's being told all these things. He doesn't know what's going on. And even in his lines before the colors were there, there's almost this fog that kind of permeates the scene as if the reader was meant to feel part of Ben's confusion. Marco works more closely with Francesco than he works with me. Marco and Francesco were good friends before we'd started. And Francesco is actually the one who had suggested Marco, because they had worked so closely together. They were almost, they weren't a package deal, but it would have been ridiculous not to bring them both on the project together because they understood each other so well.
Yeah.
They work together, and they have this great way of, or I guess Marco has this great way of just amplifying the things that Francesco is trying to do with his inks. And so you'll see in issue one, again, in this hospital scene, while the lines, the inks themselves are a little smudgier in some places, the lighting in it is also feels a lot thicker. It's weird to say, but it's the only way I can describe it is the light is a little bit thicker and almost like you kind of almost have to squint to really get at the scene, I guess. And so, Seda was our letterer who came in. I found Seda, she's done a bunch of projects for DC and Marvel. So she's a sort of a big deal in the lettering world, I guess. I couldn't have asked for a better letterer with her. There's actually a scene in issue three that's literally my favorite scene simply because of the sound effects that she chooses to put in the rain.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just so beautiful, the choices she makes to either accentuate or to hide certain things. It's really beautifully done. Everyone on the team really knows exactly what they're doing, and the book would never have been as good as it is without these people on it.
That's amazing. I just want to give you like a huge compliment, and just like you explaining the art was superb for me to listen to. Your listeners out there loved it too. I'm really excited to see this. There's a passion in you talking about how you worked with your team that like is phenomenal. Like I can.
I love everybody that's on this team. They all I can't give them enough thanks for putting the work that they did into this book.
And I have to ask real quick, what goes behind the name Sweetheart?
so that's kind of a funny story. So Sweetheart was the second name we'd chosen for it. When I initially wrote the story, it was called It Waits. And we even did a mock-up of the first cover for it with this font that we had. And you can even Google it. And this, I swear to God, this is all completely coincidental. None of us had ever even heard of this film. But we had done this mock-up cover for it. And then we sent it to this publisher who we were hoping to sign with at the time. And they sent us back a screen grab of this movie. It's like this old crappy sci-fi original horror movie called It Waits. And it is so close to the same. It is eerie how similar it is. And so we're just like, whoa, like we clearly need to rethink some things. And then I read the synopsis of It Waits, and they're really not the same at all, but they were just close enough about like this woman in a small forested town, and like she's having trouble with her personal demons. And I was like, we should probably just distance ourselves from this. And so I had this long laundry list of of potential names after It Waits. And I cringe to even say It Waits just because of Sweetheart is such a much better title. And so I had this, I had this long list of names that I was considering, and then I had put it away for a long time because I just wanted to finish the scripts on the other issues. And then when it came time to make a decision, I pulled that list back out and I looked through it, and then I saw Sweetheart, and I didn't even remember writing it down. And I was like, how could it not be Sweetheart? So yeah. One of the main characters is this girl named Maddie. And it's kind of an ironic name because she's anything but a sweetheart. She's a very crass young child. And so she's very mean. It's an obvious, I want to believe it's an apparent play on words, with diabetes and it being Sweetheart. And so this girl's nickname that her grandma gives her is Sweetheart. And it's all about, I mean, it's this undeniable parallel with diabetes and just the complications of high blood glucose levels and things like that. And so, that, and like, it just kind of sounds creepy, right?
I mean, yeah, it does. It does a lot, actually, especially looking at the cover with one of the monsters on the front and just like the Sweetheart in the back. I'm like, oh, there's one of the covers where it's the severed arm on the dinner table.
Oh my gosh, I love that cover.
Yeah, it's so good, and it's yes. Such a really good juxtaposition between, like, because you think Sweetheart, you think something light, good, cute, and then you have monster, blood dripping from the mouth, severed head. And I'm like, this is good. This has me hooked.
Oh yeah, the logo was also, that was all Seda as well, our letter. I told her, I was like, I just kind of wanted to look scratchy. Yeah. And she was like, it was like, one of those memes with haircuts and just like, just give me something scratchy. And she just like, say no more. And she gave me this logo and it was so good. And so we used that and ran with it. Sweetheart, it just felt perfect to use, and it just works on so many levels that we couldn't not use it.
Awesome. Well, you know, thank you for talking with me. And you know what, if people listening right now aren't super bought in, what is one thing that you haven't mentioned yet that you want the people listening to know about Sweetheart, to know about the project?
This book is not, it's a horror book. It's meant to be terrifying by its nature, and it is. I can honestly say I think this book is scary as hell. But working with things that are intended to be analogous to these real life problems, it's not all doom and gloom. There's a journey that we take in the story, and it's not just going to end and tell you that this condition, this mental state that you're currently in, it's not going to end by telling you that it's over and that there's no hope. There's a message in this book that says nothing is hopeless and that it's always important to keep moving, if not for the sake of others, then for yourself as well. It's not there to tell you it's hopeless. It's supposed to do the exact opposite and just tell you that things are gonna be okay if you keep pushing.
That's awesome. I'm excited. I hope everybody else is excited as well. So why don't you tell us where we can find you on the internet, where they can pre-order Sweetheart, where they can, you know, when it comes out. All that good stuff.
So I am most active on Twitter. I'm at Dill Gilbertson. That's Dill with two L's, like a dill pickle. Dill Gilbertson. I'm also on Instagram, but I post there my posts are far fewer in between than my posts on Twitter. I have a website, dylandoescomics.com. You can see a lot of my previous work there and some of my future stuff. You can also just sort of shoot me DMs, and so my DMs are open, and so I'm always free to talk on there. Sweetheart will be in previews for pre-order in January. I would very much love to plug a pre-order code right now, but we do not have it yet. But it is set to come out in March 2020, and it will be in comic shops everywhere, and it will be especially everywhere if you ask your comic shop for it.